Blog Talk Radio.
Turning and turning in the widening gyre, the falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart. The center cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. The blood dim tide is loosed, and everywhere the ceremony of innocence is drowned. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. Surely some revelation is at hand. Surely the second coming is at hand. The second coming. Hardly are those words out when a vast image out of Spiritus Mundi troubles my sight. A waste of desert sand. A shape with lion body and the head of a man. A gaze blank and pitiless as the sun. Is moving its slow thighs while all about it reel shadows of the indignant desert birds. The darkness drops again, but now I know that 20 centuries of stony sleep were vexed to nightmare by a rocking cradle. And what, rough beast, its hour come round at last, slouches towards Bethlehem to be born.
Well, that intro was William Butler Yeats. And this is In Our Craft or Sullen Art. I'm Richard Weissman, and I believe I have Neutron Bomb, my co-host, on hold. This is Late Night Poets on the largest radio show having to do with poetry on Late Night Poets, and on Blog Talk Radio, and featured on allpoetry.com, which they tell us is the largest poetry site on the internet. Let me bring my host on, my co-host on. Sorry, I'm a little punchy. Hey, Neutron.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. So I didn't sleep that well last night, so I'm a little punchy, but I'm here, and that's okay.
That's all right.
How are
That'll
you
make
doing?
Two of us. We'll figure it out. Yeah, not bad. Just a bit of a scratchy throat, but no COVID, so I'm exceedingly happy. So,
absolutely. Yeah, you don't want COVID. It's you know, it's different for everyone. Some people it's nothing. Other people can get real sick. So better not to have it, all things being equal.
Look, for us, it's more the fact that you're stuck indoors for 7 days until it passes under the restrictions. So you get over it pretty quickly if you've been vaccinated, but you still have to stay put for a while. So, yeah, that's the annoying part, the isolation. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and some people get really sick if they have pre-existing conditions, and it's just a mess. But, you know,
yeah.
life in all of its varied forms, and that's one of the things that make poetry so attractive is that we get to turn that pain and suffering and trials and tribulation into art. So I'm all for it. I'm all for the art. Okay, so, and I see Luke Jr. is trying to get on, but he's having some technical difficulties, but certainly being on the board, that's keeping us company too. We appreciate it. What do you think of the Open?
I thought it was fantastic. Was that in Yeats' actual voice?
No. I couldn't find anything.
I was
going to
say that would be pretty damn good if it was, because he was quite early on.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, I'm sure there are some recordings, but I couldn't find anything that was out there. So I went with some actor that was reciting names. And
well,
yeah,
he
I
did well
it was
at it. It
really
was, I can understand why it's your favorite piece, hearing it read like that.
Yeah, you know, and there's something about Yeats. I don't know if you caught that O'Casey, Sean O'Casey quote. So Sean O'Casey was this playwright, and that in one of his plays, one of his characters says, Yeats will drive you mad. And that's what it is that it's kind of like, I've heard it called, some other writers called it the prick of the mind, but it's just like this thing that just eats away at you. It's just a normal poem, it's just normal poetry, but the more you think about it, the more you hear it, the more you kind of just like bathe in it, the more it can kind of get under your skin and change the way you think. And certainly, for me, change the way I write. I mean, it's just one of those things. I don't necessarily try and write like Yeats or write like Eliot or Joyce, but their work, it just, like I said, it's the prick of the mind. It gets in there, and it changes how you view the craft. So.
Agreed. Agreed. I must admit, before you mentioned this as a prompt earlier before the shows, I had not actually been exposed to Yeats, and I was very impressed with the quality of his work, and he has quite a unique voice from what I've read so far.
Yeah, you know, well, we've got Laurent on, so let me bring him on, hear what he thinks of Yeats. And there he is. Hey, Laurent.
Hello.
Hello, Laurent.
So we're talking.
Hello.
Hey. William Butler Yeats.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're talking William Butler Yeats. And I don't know if you heard the open that we chose.
No, I didn't. This is a last-minute experiment calling in.
Ah, okay. So, you know, just famous Yeats poetry. It was, I'm trying to remember now. So I'm apologizing. This is my second time apologizing. I didn't sleep that well last night. So I'm kind of doing this on etheric fumes, but I am going to muddle through because that's what we do. Oh, of course, The Second Coming. So, yeah. So we had some actor who did a great job at it reading The Second Coming, and that's how we opened the show. So,
I wish I heard it.
I'm guessing that, he did a great job, too. It was really quite a dramatic read. And I'm guessing that Yeats is among your favorites as well.
Yeah, and I'm particularly disappointed that I wasn't able to write what I wanted to for tonight. I've been struggling with writing lately. So whatever I can offer, I will, without relation to whether it makes sense for the evening or not.
Okay. Yeah, it happens. It's one of the things about, my experience, one of the things about the creative process is that sometimes it flows and sometimes it doesn't flow. So... But certainly, yeah, I was saying to Neutron that one of my favorite quotes about Yeats was the Sean O'Casey quote from one of his plays where he says, Yeats will drive you mad. And I thought that, it always stuck with me because I kind of thought that what a pithy description of Yeats' brilliance and what it does to you as a writer. Because it can drive you nuts. You're reading his poetry, which on the surface can seem kind of simple, but it kind of like bores into your brain and does something to you, or that's been my experience.
Well, I love his imagery and his symbolism. It's really pretty magnificent. And you can't beat a good Irish poet.
Yeah, I know. It's quite remarkable, and his lyricism too. You know, it's funny because I always think about, you know, the mysticism, and I think about, as you say, the imagery. But when I was reading through Yeats's work in prepping the contest, it reminded me of how just, you know, magical that lyricism is, and rhyming too. You know, he did a lot of rhyming poems, and they were all just stellar, you know. So, yeah, much to recommend him, of course. So I guess without further ado, Neutron, we should jump right in. Oh, you know what? If you wait long enough, someone else is on hold. Let me just bring someone on.
Good evening.
703, you're on the air.
Oh, it's Tom.
Hey, is that Mark? Hey, Mark. How are you doing?
Good evening, Mark.
Oh, is it Mark? Is it Mark or is it Tom?
I think I just talked.
Is it Tom?
This is Tom.
Is it Tom?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, hi, Tom. Okay, cool.
Hi, Tom.
Sorry about that. How are you doing?
It's no problem. I'm not really sure I'm who I'm looking at when I look at the mirror, you know.
Now I hear you. Okay. I think my earpiece is a little weak as well. So I'm glad you could join us, and you actually have a piece on the board, right?
Oh, yeah.
Great.
Yeah, I've just posted
awesome.
It.
Oh, good. There you go.
Get it right.
Awesome. Well, that solves my first question for you, Neutron, which is, where do you want to go first? So.
Yeah, I thought this was a great piece. And Tom, when you're ready, it's on the board.
Oh, okay. You want me to start? All right. It's awful heavy.
Yeah.
Start with it. What beast to ride? One. Proud cry. They have suffered. Don't deny. Job has shown them the path of victims' credence. They hide in what the Bible provides. Glory cannot be denied when they hide their pride in the victim's behavior and cries. The hawk seeks prey and casts its eye for those that hide so it can swoop in for the kill. Aye, those that will play victim at all costs are soon lost and slain, betrayed and tossed into the rubbish heap for the final sweep. Money changers, bankers of fortune's might, now the fright of dark nights when all accounts begin to diminish. Reason falls in the face of beliefs. Money's worth is a matter of faith, and its priests lies defy all attempts to maintain value. No matter how high coin is piled, after a while, it falls. No truth supports the tower. Babel is easy to recall, and we know what goes before. Two, God rarely needs to interfere. Man's own actions lead to the consequences man strives so hard to avoid at any cost. We all know that the tale of the whale, how Jonah failed to run from fate and superstition's weight. He could not face his own fate. Those that saw him knew the size of his sins would bring them peace if he was tossed into seas and lost. Scapegoats have gentler fate and survive with less scars of hate. Jonah was blessed. The whale wasn't late. God's Uber could have been a dolphin for entertainment's sake, a good tail pulled, the largest beast. Rescue is recognized by the crowd as a time to hoot, applaud, and grow loud. Who would want to be a Jonah? I am sure not you or me. Who would want the cost of faith to be more than the gracious recognition of how holy you have been? Who would be willing to climb aboard the ass, ride down the road of palms to the hell waiting in Jerusalem? What if God asked you not to bear Job's plagues, instead asked you to go forth before the crowds he laughed at and scorned? Are you willing to be at risk with God, day in and day out, face all your doubts? Work to overcome your pride and find all your resistance. No more than you have been living alive. Cry. Why? Love is blessed, and the war you fought gave less. Doves fly on feathered wings and bring signs of relief. You were offered the chance to be God's herald, even if it meant facing others' jeers, and you turned away. You could have been the one on the craft offering surcease and peace, even when others said you offered only comic relief to the suffering, and they knew every day. Would you demand God damn those who would not listen to you when you were the messenger of the word? Could you forgive and reject? Dear God, I did not love them enough. End poem.
Woo! Thank you, Tom. That was a great way to open our evening of Yates. Wonderful, wonderful piece. Laurent, what did you think of it?
I really like this piece. I mean, I like the way Tom used Bible stories to teach us about the abandonment of faith, or the refusal to continue in belief in the face of ridicule, the fear of the critical crowd, inevitably leading in the Bible to a God who punishes poor Jonah and the whale. He didn't fare too well, and it uses that to let us know that those who stand up for what they believe fare better, at least in remaining true to themselves. You know, you have to stand up for what you believe in. Now, as a fairly prosaic description of a really beautiful poem, I like what he does in this, especially the third stanza. The money changers, bankers of fortune's might, now the fright of dark nights when all accounts begin to diminish. Reason falls in the face of belief. Money's worth is a matter of faith, and its priests' lies defy all attempts to maintain value. And what is value, after all? Not just coin. Regardless of how he says, for instance, no matter how high coin is piled, after a while, it falls. It has an awful lot to say, and I like it a great deal.
Amen. Yeah, I too. I try and read all of these before the show, and I did give it a read. And the spirituality and the spiritual path is what hit me first go round. This second go round, the morality and our struggle to be decent and to maintain our humanity in the face of life's temptations and tribulations struck me, as you aptly pointed out, Laurent. And I guess I did touch on it in my original comment, too, the struggle for humility in the face of humiliation, of redemption despite life's inevitable struggles. The poem is one of tragic beauty, of the journey as opposed to some hollow destination. So, yeah, just a real strong opener for our Evening of the Eighth. And Neutron, I am going to give you final word. What'd you think?
Yeah, look, I was really impressed with this poem. And just from the reading of the introduction, rather, I thought this was the right place to go. I thought it was quite a profound write, the kind that makes you question whether you be a believer or a non-believer. And I think, in my personal opinion, public humiliation and ridicule are far more effectual in reducing the ego to the size of a flea than a plague of locusts to overcome. And it was a very thought-provoking write. So well done, Tom.
Oh, well, thank you much. You know, quick aside, when I took Econ 101, they said that the value money held was a matter of our belief in its value, which is when I realized that economics was nothing but another course in religion.
Yep.
Think about it.
Absolutely.
Very
okay,
profound.
Neutron.
Okay, so we've got one carryover. Don't ask me how I missed this last week, because I was going through that list about five times trying to find another poem to bring up, but somehow I missed Way Down Upon Joy's poem. So I just wanted to get this up early so that we can do it justice. So I don't know if you want to do an intro for it, Richard, just a quick rehash of last week.
Right. So last week, was your choice, and you chose, or 2 weeks ago was your choice, you chose Margaret Atwood, and the prompt that that Joy picked, it was prompt 4, we were the people who we were not in the papers. We live in the blank white spaces at the edges of print. It gave us more freedom. We live in the gap between the stories, and that's from The Handmaid's Tale. And so that's a pretty good intro.
Yes, that
and,
is. Did you want me to read it, or
sure.
Did you want to give it a read?
Sure.
Yeah? Okay.
No.
Okay,
you
so
go
it's
ahead.
Called. Okay. So it's called Photographs, and it's a sonnet. We, her and I, were news, but seldom seen. Our photographs would never share what's masked. White would fill the space of unforeseen, while black became the bones of thoughts unasked. Blurred lines of grey would surface, born again, and yet our times of freedom left adrift. The eyes of some who kept on looking in would know that keeping up would be makeshift. If life is lived between the words unread, and love is found between the present's past, the gift will be hypotheses unsaid, but found, disguised, the silent news amassed. Perhaps the gaps are where our lives begin, and not the places shared, just standing in. End poem.
Great read, Neutron. And, you know, it bears repeating that Joy has this gift of lyricism, of strong rhyming and an understanding of how to do that. And she brings it every time, and this one was no exception. And I especially like, if life is lived between the words unread and love is found between the present's past, the gift will be hypotheses unsaid, but found disguised as silent news amassed. Perhaps the gaps are where our lives begin, and not the places shared, just standing in. It's beautiful poetry. She always does such an amazing job. So I'm glad we got a chance to read it, because it's always fun to read her work. And Tom, what'd you think?
This is one of those tight little packages where you find yourself parsing through the individual lines and words, trying to find how much meaning is slipping between your grasps. And she does a wonderful job while Black became the bones of thoughts unasked. In terms of speaking to how much do we really make ourselves present as a presence in the lives of others in a way that shows that we really are participating with them, not just watching like, you know, we do with TV ads to show, get up, spit real fast to get something we want, come back, enjoy it some more, maybe watch reruns. But she speaks to and really asks the question of how much are we willing to be present and where are we present when we choose to be. Very, very striking piece.
Great comment. And Neutron, your thoughts on the piece?
Yeah, look, I actually had to read this one a number of times before I made a comment. And I just thought, as Tom said, because it was so tightly packed, when I gave it that extra attention, it was quite an enlightened write. And I think you feel the oppression of the black and white and the grays. Well, they too represent restriction. It was a great answer to the prompt that you mentioned in the intro to the poem, Richard. And all I can say is, in a perfectly imperfect world, one must do what they can to survive. And it provides an intellectual take and also elicited wisdom throughout the poem. Very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay, should we move on to our next one?
Sure. I will bring up the next poem. Just had to make sure I wasn't on mute.
Okay.
And Richard, if you could give this one a read by Linda Marshall.
Sure. So this is Linda Marshall. It's called Rough Beast Slouching. One, a mountain capped with snow, a coldly blue sky, we wait alone. Two, out of the silence, at first faint groans, trouble the still air, then the screaming begins, the limitless light embroiders the thin blood of the familiar victim. Three, menaces everywhere, dark shadows threaten with unsteady gestures to seize whatever is within their power. Four, our skins, irrespective of color, are rasped by an unforgiving sun. This unexpected heat wave presages perhaps an avalanche. Five, out of our fortified barracks, we emerge, blinking at brainwashed children carrying banners, hearing their shrill, hysterical voices, recycling the propaganda they have learned. Six, swallows leave the scene, flying as always in search of freedom. Trees flex their roots and branches, perhaps in secret dread of a coming woodcutter. Seven, oceans overflow. The ground erupts in earthquakes. Volcanoes choke the air. Eight, why are the deluded minions so eager to drink the poison draught, so willing to believe the discordant trumpets announcing the failed millennium to come? Nine, stars fall on the earth from the troubled sky. Metal crumbles like paper. Rock dissolves instantly to sand. Ten, we who try to love in spite of the way the world hug one another closely as if that could save us. 11, our eyes lock gazes with each other, seeking to shut out the flames and smoke burning to the jubilant cries of pleasure, of assembled multitudes tangled in briars, taking nettles for dock leaves. 12. Our gaze are touching such little things to hold against the advancing tsunami. 13. We turn away at last, compelled to watch the horror show. 14. No longer holding one another, it is not only our bodies that feel so suddenly cold. 15. Flowers fade or are crushed. Everything kindly is forgotten. We stand almost outside time and space as those who have only answers and never questions quick march against the retreating tide of love. 16. All we have left now to defend ourselves against the rough beasts slouching ever closer is the effervescent wisp of love, nothing more than that, its flimsy tensile strength, surely too little to withstand the encroaching darkness threatening everywhere, everything. End of poem. Laurent, if we could start with you.
Certainly. Oh, for the lack of love. Because that's what this poem, I think, describes, an earth in crisis in many ways. Everyone is at each other with hammer and tongs. I'm particularly struck by number 3, menaces everywhere, dark shadows threaten with unsteady gestures to seize whatever is within their power. The title of this is so apt, Rough Beasts Slouching. I love the phrasing in that. There is number 11, our eyes lock gazes with each other, seeking to shut out the flames and smoke, burning to the jubilant cries of pleasure of assembled multitudes tangled in briars, taking nettles for dock leaves. This is also a very lyrical piece, and it almost perfectly describes the sensations that I have in my head about what is happening to the world in general today. And I think does a great job of following up on the prompt from Yeats.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Neutron, your thoughts?
You know, on listening to this read again, the social conscience that runs through this piece is very strong. I was drawn to 5, out of our fortified barracks we emerge, blinking at brainwashed children carrying banners, hearing their shrill, hysterical voices, recycling the propaganda they have learned. And this right for me encapsulates, at least to a certain extent, that we are the makers of our own destiny as a society and also on an individual level. And it hit very hard, especially with the overturning of Roe v. Wade in the US and the slippery slope targeting women and minority groups at the moment globally. It's not just the US that is affected. You look at, for example, the policies for climate change historically and currently across the globe. And I sit here in my room with yet another natural disaster declared, the third in a year in New South Wales and Australia. So safe, but a lot of people are without homes once again for the third time in a year. So it really hit hard.
Great comment. And Tom, your thoughts?
I like how this starts, in a sense, to me anyway, the whole mountain capped with snow, coldly blue sky, we wait alone. That sense of having no community, you know, so many of us are, when we really confront our aloneness, are defeated by it. And the way this grows through his discussion of all the different ways that things attack us, things tear at us, destroy our sense of value, our sense of purpose. Number 5 speaks to how even in our efforts to create something for our family, our whole system of society works directly against us more often than not. even though schools really function as the major socialization machine in this country, that is misunderstood and misused and screamed about by people who recognize it but are terrified by anything that might happen that's caused by it. So you have what's going on in Florida and right here near me in Loudoun County, and creating all sorts of false evils so that they can explain away the fact that they have no idea what the hell they're doing. It's just terrifying to watch it go on. And so all the quote-unquote meanings of what is evil, when it's really more sort of, to me, a almost like one of those little shows you see that people using their hands to make shadows and tell stories, you know, with shadow play. We have gotten to the point where most of our relationship to the universe is based on some sort of shadow play of our fears, which we never really confront, but blame each other about and get nothing done. And so it becomes very quickly this rough beast slouching. And this poem does a beautiful job of sort of showing the way that it goes on. We turn at last compelled to watch the horror show, no longer holding one another. If you can't confront your own aloneness, you can't possibly begin to feel the company of another person. It's not only our bodies that feel so suddenly cold. I just really, this is, in a sense, a delightful piece. Another thing, a rather damning epitaph.
Absolutely, yeah. It struck me also, Tom, as a frightening vision of a dystopian future that feels all too real, ripped from today's headlines, as everyone was mentioning. And the section that hit me is obviously the the one that everyone was most struck by, that number five. So I won't read it again, but it's certainly gosh, what was that song that reminds me of? It's by Yes. I can't remember the name of the song, but the words, crawling out our dirty holes, our morals, their morals disappeared. That just, you know, out of our fortified barracks we emerge, blinking at brainwashed children, carrying banners. It just hit me very strong, very sad. But here we are, just 100 years after the rise of fascism, and we're right back where we were. It's quite sad that rough beasts are still slouching 100 years later. And with that, I am turning it back to you, Neutron, for our next poem.
Okay, so I have a poem by R. Byron, and I might give this one a read because I'm going to get Laurent up next. So this one's called A Sky Not Divided. Aroma charred smoke, bursting russet clouds, ruffled satin sheets, billows of raindrops, cradle setting sun, blossoms, ocean crest, edged infinity crossing rippled waves, aged white cotton clouds shroud like face of birth, threads of stars woven pithy sky northward, syllables of wind, sky not divided, setting ancient suns cusped in old gorse age, and so on.
Great. Read, Neutron. So, Tom, why don't you start us out? What do you think?
In a sense, since it's so short and tight, it's almost as if you have somebody with geeks in mind looking at you going, oh, and just to give you a thought, because so quickly are these tight, nice lines you poured out before us that you have to stop and go, okay, what am I being given? It's more than just a quick description of a few clouds and raindrops. Instead, he takes that opening stanza, and in the second one, gets you to stop and look at how much that you see becomes a reflection of how much of the way you have lived, and it speaks to you through that lens quite clearly and quite strongly if you're willing to listen.
Great comment. Yeah, I too really love this brevity. I thought the imagery and lyricism was stunning, and he captures the air, the spirit of Yeats in just 53 words. Quite an accomplishment. Very well done. And Laurent, your thoughts?
This is a beautiful brevity. When he started with aroma charred smoke and bursting russet clouds, and I thought we were going to see a point counterpoint of imagery. And yet what he does really is offer a sensorium, an appeal to the senses with wonderful imagery. The ruffled satin sheets, billows of raindrops, cradles setting sun, blossoms ocean crest, edged infinity crossing rippled waves. He takes the image of, for instance, of the ocean crest as edged infinity. I think it's beautifully done. Just the way the poet views what's around us, managing to capture in very different ways the world in all its glory. I really, really like this.
Great comment. And Neutron, I'll give you final word.
Sure. I love this pint-sized brevity. There was certainly no filler. For me, I found it quite an abstract piece. But after listening to Tom and well, really everyone's comments, I have to say it was quite centering in nature. One thing I'm learning as I get older is to appreciate the small things in life. And I think this poem touches on that and takes it to a more profound level. My favorite part by far was the last stanza. I'll just drill down into the part that was my favorite. Age white, cotton cloud shroud like face of birth. Just wonderful phrasing.
Absolutely. Great comment. No, very strong piece. And where would you like to go next?
So I was thinking, Laurent, if you would be happy to give your poem a read, now's the time.
All right. This probably covers or attempts to cover some of the ground that Linda Marshall did in her poem, Rough Beasts Slouching, although certainly not with the same skill. This is called Unwilling to Let Go. Entropy is knowable. It is the green shoot of civilizations grown sterile, poking their magnificent features above the sand. Old waters run underground, rushing silently by beneath an arid land, imposing dusty travail. Come then, ironic fate, centuries in the making. Strike with the full force of your karmic powers. You left subtlety behind, the bold imprint of your historical legacy on the human desert for all to see. Too many followed hoary trails, lessons unlearned, sheep following a bell to a far greening, bitter on arrival. Prophets of commerce and greed ground the grist fine until it all vanished in the blaze of indulgence, a shimmering cloud that floated away. So we sought out our petard and hoisted ourselves above a sere earth, swaying in an uncertain wind, seeking newly minted venues. Hands grasped the past with an iron grip, unwilling to let go. Sit transit, Gloria Mundi. End poem.
Wow. What a glorious read that was. Okay. Neutron, if we can start comments off with you, what'd you think?
Sure. So firstly, just referring to the author note, the Latin phrase means thus passes the glory of the world. And I just think that was such a profound way to end the poem. And I think I was drawn to this section here. You left subtlety behind, the bold imprint of your historical legacy on the human desert for all to see. Too many followed hoary trails, lessons unlearned, sheep following a bell to a far greening bitter on arrival. I was just so impressed with this write. I know from personal effect, I've submitted poetry before. I haven't felt has been my best, but this hit was hard hitting for a start. And then you follow on to profits of commerce and greed ground the grist fine until it all vanished in a blaze of indulgence, a shimmering cloud that floated away. I think this is truly a ride of the times. I think I could get into some fairly controversial commentary here. I will leave it to the other listeners to read between the lines there. But it's certainly a very well done poem.
Thank you.
Great comment. Yeah, I too loved Prophets of Commerce and Greed ground the grist fine until it all vanished in a blaze of indulgence, the shimmery cloud that floated away. And the imagery there and throughout the poem, but there in particular, is just so visceral, and you have such a skill at using that imagery to make us feel the emotional pain of what it's like to live in our time. And yeah, it just really hit me on an emotional level, palpable. And just my opinion, but I think that's what poetry is really all about. So bravo, very well done. And Tom, your thoughts?
Well, I like how he starts off with the contrast of contradictions, you might say, because entropy is where things fall apart, reach the lowest level of energy. I once had a chemistry teacher look out at the classroom of high school students who really didn't want to be in chemistry and go, and you guys are a perfect example of entropy. But he goes, entropy is knowable. It is the green shoot of civilizations grown sterile. Everything has to come to an end by the laws of entropy. Things will fall apart, you know, and went the way of all good things. It just sort of fell apart. And perhaps we are seeing currently maybe not the end of countries, but perhaps there is a chapter of history that is truly coming to an end. And if this is true, then we will see an increase in chaos for a while before hopefully something or somebody comes forward. And this speaks to that kind of contrast, you know, come then, ironic fate, centuries in the making, strike for the full force of your comic powers. You left subtlety behind, the bold imprint of your historical legacy on the human desert for all to see. Yeah, you know, things come and things go. It's been the way it's always been. And this really seems to me to sing that song very judiciously, very clearly at the same time.
Thank you, Tom. Sorry, I was on mute. And thank you, Richard.
That's okay. That's okay. Great comment, Tom. And we do have someone on hold. I don't know how long that's been going on, but let me bring them on the air. And this is another 703, so let's find out who it is. 703, you're on the air.
I'm sorry. Good evening. The
hey, Captain.
Hey, Bobby. How you doing?
Hey! Neutron! And everybody.
So welcome, Bobby. I don't know
if you
had a chance to hear Laurent's poem.
I did. With my impeccable timing, I came in just at the advent of his very trenchant verse. As is always his wont, his command of the language is impeccable. The expressions of his thoughts are quite succinct and pithy. It reads very, like you said, viscerally. And I think it reflects the feeling, I think, that we, at least I have, of being caught in the downward spiral of the water rushing down the drain. At least that's what it feels like civilization is doing right now. So I really enjoyed it, and it terrified the hell out of me. So I probably won't sleep tonight.
Great comment. Thanks so much, Bobby. Okay, and with that, I am turning it back to you, Neutron, for our next poem.
Okay, so I might get Tom to read A Haunting by Rent.
Okay.
If he then Tom needs to leave at 11. So
yeah,
right. I saw that as well.
They got an ICRT scan lined up for me at 11:20 in the morning.
Make sure you smile.
Yeah, well, you know, I unfortunately only quit smoking about 10 years ago, and before that, I smoked a lot. Sonnet 21: A Haunting by Orentz. When one day you awake from life's swift dream and find the threshold passed and not ahead, you'll walk among deep shadows with the dead. But do not drink of Lay's darkened stream. Remember me and linger for a while to haunt the narrow spaces in between. Return to me and watch me, then unseen, reach for a book of poems with a smile. You'll recognize the words all filled with you, our heartbeats made immortal in the flow, and know that you were loved and dearly so, and quake and cry at every rhyme. Dan, wonder why you cut the golden thread of love spelled bright with stars, now dimmed and fled. End poem.
Great read, Tom.
Thank you.
Yeah, what a wonderful sonnet. You'll recognize the world, words all filled with you, our heartbeats made immortal in the flow, and know that you were loved and dearly so, and quake and cry as every rhyme hits true. Just her poetry melts in the mind and mouth. A recitation could not help but invoke the spirit of Yeats. Deeply spiritual and mystical throughout, with tons of literary allusions. Just a wonderful piece of poetry. And Tom, I know you have to go soon, so would you like to comment on the poem before you leave?
I love the way this opens. When one day you awake from life's swift dream and find that threshold passed and not ahead. I mean, it's both a statement and a question, because when will you awaken? And when you awaken, will you walk among the deep shadows with the dead? Is death going to be that close to your time? Here, when you finally wake up and realize all you have been gifted with, and the the way she takes it, it's in a way feels almost like a eulogy. At the same time, it feels like a caution, a reminder that you have been gifted with so much and treated it with so little value. I just think that's just one of those ones that you could almost sing it like a lullaby, and yet at the same time, when people really listen to the words instead of just keeping beat to the beat, they might be stunned to find out that it's really speaking directly to them, and it's time to wake up before all the time's gone. Music beautifully done.
Great comment. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I agree with what Tom said wholeheartedly. And for me, this radiates a forlorn, heartfelt plea, almost to be remembered and remember those that leave this mortal coil. But above and beyond that, what Tom said is, don't waste your time on this planet. You know, you may only get one chance at it, depending on what your views are on the afterlife. And this part here resonated. You'll recognize the words all filled with you, our heartbeats made immortal in the flow, and know that you were loved and dearly so, and quake and cry as every rhyme hits true. It hits very close to home as I near the second anniversary of my best friend's passing. So very well done.
Thanks so much, Neutron. And Laurent, I'll give you final word. Are you on mute?
he dropped, so you may have to bring him back online.
Oh, I see. I see, I see, I see. The little details that messed me up. Okay, now we should be able to hear you, Laurent.
You got me now?
We do.
Okay, good. I love the way that she, Arendt, invokes the divine comedy in this, urging her past lover not to drink of Lethe's darkened stream, the stream of forgetfulness, one of, I think, five rivers that ran through Hades. It is, to me, a poem of immense sorrow. The emotion of sadness filled me completely when I read this, especially that second stanza, remember me and linger for a while to haunt the narrow spaces in between. Return to me and watch me when unseen. Reach for a book of poems with a smile. Just an absolutely lovely piece. Sometimes the loveliest, the saddest of poems are written to someone who will never read them, never read the lines. And this is such an appealing and an emotional poem about someone who has passed that is a really striking piece.
Absolutely. Great comment. And with that, I am bringing it back to you for our next one.
Okay, so I think Bobby dropped as well, so she might have to be brought off of mute as well, and I'll get Bobby up next.
And I did. I did that.
Excellent.
Fool me once, but I'll catch on the second time.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you, Obi-Wan. Okay, I see you have me up here. Okay, my turn now.
Yep.
And I owe you an apology for being truant. I will not even regale you with all the adventures I've had in the last several days, but they include a broken toilet, and when I say broken, I mean to flood the floor, and AC that quit in the night and left me with an 86-degree bedroom. Other than that, you know, I've been fine. So that's why I finished it today. And I picked Yeats poem, The Stolen Child. The last part of it, the refrain, for he comes, the human child, to the waters and the wild with a fairy hand in hand, for the world's more full of weeping than he can understand. And here's my piece. He plays in the wood at the edge of the lake, under the eye of the fairies, neath their leafy cloak. They spy from the verge of a verdant fern brake the human child who plays alone near an ancient oak. Their whispers so quiet, like a voice on the breeze, they murmur to him of moonlight enchantment, of magic and of charms, starlit dancing neath the trees, within the rings of the mushrooms fairy planted. He follows fell voices to a fairy ring's rim and glimpses smiling aspects amid tiny shadows. In the twilight, we hands gesture welcome to him. They beckon him to join them and follow. All this was in silence, for he heard not the harp chord, though now he drawing nearer, he could see their playing. Finally venturing to the magic circle to put his hand, to put his foot toward the wee figures dancing and swaying. All at once his small ears were charmed with strains of the most melodious music he had ever heard, and he watched fairy folk whirling round to the refrains as by this otherworldly music they were spurred. They promise he'd drink dew far sweeter than mead, and forever in their keeping he'd dwell. So he listened and danced, feeling light as a reed, as he fell so deeply under their spell. Father and mother search for their son so dear. Far and wide they roam, calling his name. But their voices and their cries he will no longer hear. They cannot know he is no longer the same. He dwells now mid hollows and moss-covered stone. He is of the fairy folk now, a thing of waters and wild. The fairies have taken them into their own, and he is theirs, no more human, now child beguiled. End one.
Whoa, wow. That was worth the wait, Bobby. I normally have read these before the show starts, yeah. But that is okay. I am going to do this off the cuff. I will say that I loved the fact that you were able to do a storytelling write that was rhyming. I feel like it's of almost another era, and that era actually matches quite well. If I think of the era, I think of the Romantic poets, and Yeats kind of bridged the gap between the poets of the earlier era, who were masters of rhyming poetry, and modernists like T.S. Eliot and Ezra Pound. So he has, the poem has that, and it also seems quite fitting that it's rhyming in terms of the fact that it is a myth, and that whole hearkening to poetry with that mythical tinge, it's a good match for that as well. And so I thought it was a very successful piece. He told a beautiful story, and it was haunting and very well done. So bravo.
Thank you
and
very much.
Laurent, your thoughts.
The Stolen Child was rhymed, and so I tried to do that same thing.
Right. So bravo there. And Laurent, your thoughts.
What a fine piece this is. They promise you can drink dew far sweeter than mead, and forever in their keeping he'd dwell. So he listened and danced, feeling light as a reed, as he fell so deeply under their spell. This fine piece follows in a folk tradition of beliefs in the fairy. It's entrancing in its storytelling. The child is beguiled, as is the reader, carried along by a rhyming flow that is butter smooth and language evocative of the subject matter. Nice job, Bobby.
Thank you very much.
Great comment, Laurent. And Neutron, I'll give you final word.
Look, I was very impressed with this also. I think everyone's touched on the rhyming scheme, and I think what Laurent said there is regarding the butter smooth. Indeed. And for me, it kind of reminds me of a children's author I used to read way back when, Enid Blyton. And it takes me back to my childhood, this poem, of wondering when the fairies were coming to visit. And just that mysticism of youth that you drink up like a fountain. So very well done.
Thank you very much, Neutron.
Great. Great comment, Neutron. Okay, where are we going next? I see it.
Okay, so we have a poem here, which I'm hoping that that Laurent can give a read. I couldn't see a SoundCloud there.
I'd love to. I love collapse poetry. This is called The Silver Shores of Byzantium. This is no place for pleated skins, where the golden mounds of naked shoulders gleam over yonder mounds where wildflowers dot, and naked feet and round cheeks run about, seeking the dewy freshness of a summer's morn, before the first flames of heat sway forlorn, begin to penetrate, prickly ions tickling inside nostrils flare. Before the cicadas trill in a concerto, under the vegetal trellis of a gazebo, I shall drag myself to a humid shelter inside a mossy cave, where before the molten process begins, before I shed my husks now wearing thin, I shall trill to you, trinking in honor of the glory of our flame, while my finger and tongue skirt the rim of a bohemian crystal, and at the top of my lungs I shall trill as high as I can until no air is left of me. Only till then can you bury me, my withered body, and slough, or better yet, build me a pyre of birch wood and leaves, and let me burn in an amnesiac revelry. Then sing for me an elegiac chorus of mermaid's wail as the lighthouse light flickers and trail while the foghorn moans. My rudder's steady, my eyes focused on the darkened horizon as my sails are rounded as the wind blows and blows, as I sail full speed toward the silver shores of Byzantium that I so dearly know. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Laurent. Thanks so much. And Bobby, I'll give you first word.
Well, the word is wow. This is, I think this is by far one of the best. Co-op always writes some exquisite poetry, but this is far and away one of the best pieces I think I've ever read from her. It's complex. It is detailed in its descriptions. The visual imagery is deep and rich. The metaphors are just so exquisite. This is such a superb piece. Before the cicadas trill in a concerto under the vegetal trellis of a gazebo, I shall drag myself to a humid shelter inside a mossy cave. and it just the whole thing. I mean, it's just superb. I mean, this if this were put the music, this would be an aria.
Excellent comment. Yeah, I too really love this one, and it's always kind of interesting to me when we get that first poem for the contest. It shows that someone is just, you know, the muse has struck, and that's what I got from this. And especially only till then can you bury me, my withered body, and well, or better yet, build me a pyre of birchwood and leaves, and let me burn in a music revelry, and sing for me an elegiac chorus of mermaid wail, as the lighthouse light flickers and trail, while the foghorn moans. I thought that stanza was so rich, so lyrical, and the extended metaphor dazzling with it. And it truly, it didn't, it stood on its own, but it truly invoked Byzantium. So truly a great piece. And Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I honestly could have quoted the whole poem as far as my favorite piece was concerned. I thought there was a lyrical quality to this rite that I really admired, and Kolap's grasp of poetic device is just divine, a truly great offering up for the prompt. Well done.
Absolutely. And, Laurence, I'll give you a final word on it.
Thank you. You quoted the stanza I was going to quote, which really... had me riveted, quite frankly. It's such a beautifully complex piece, well worthy of the prompt, and really in many ways it looks at the relationship between mere mortals and immortality, between the world we live in and the spiritual world. In many cases, she really did the prompt justice. Neutron said, I could quote the whole thing. It's top to bottom. It's simply gorgeous. Definitely one of her best.
Absolutely. And with that, I see we've got the next one.
Yeah. So, Richard, I'm going to get your poem up next. When you're ready,
okay.
Go forth.
Yep. Okay, so this actually was inspired by two of my favorite Yeats poems, The Second Coming, which is how we open the show, and Under Ben Bulbin. And it's called Horseman Pass By. The white horse crowned rider quick passes, his viral winds and 95 us, leaving us gasping for air. A blood-red horse follows after, with sword-bearing rider ever whispering of wars, internal and global, of hand-to-hand, eye-to-eye, and thermonuclear radioactive mushrooms raining across our rented sky. Then comes the food merchant, whose scales weigh gold against scanty bits of hard white wheat, leaving hundreds of millions wanting, quaking with bloated-bellied hunger, staring on as his sweaty black steed gallops past, dusting its poison over our sun-withered crops. Old fourth and final horse is pale, and upon him sits the eternal skeleton, death. In his wake, hellfire gulps all. Gaze long and marvel not that 21 centuries of cold cast sleep, now vexed to a waking nightmare, rise again to hear the falconer's call. Horseman, pass by. End of poem.
I'm going to be a bit cheeky and get my comment in first, Richard, because I just thought this was a superb right of the time of our leaders making there's a strong focus on the hexes that arise from modern living, but it's also got that mysticism with the reference to the four horses of the apocalypse, from what I understand. You've touched on globalization and also the focus on fuel over food crops. There was so much I could sink my teeth into, very meaty metaphors, and I look forward to absorbing it with further reads. Laurent, what were your thoughts?
This is a wonderfully composed piece. Now, Richard, you don't write bad poetry, but I think I like this one better than anything you've written recently. Then comes the food merchant whose scales weigh gold against scanty bits of hard white wheat, leaving hundreds of millions wanting, quaking with bloated belly hunger, staring on as his sweaty black steed gallops past, dusting its poison over our sun-withered crops. That invitation to the death to pass by. It has an eye. The poem has an eye towards our death's inevitability. Just not now, not right at this moment. And you draw well from the Second Coming, which talks about the rough beasts slouching towards Bethlehem to be born. That's always been one of my favorite lines, and I really think you did that justice with the way you described old fourth and final horse as pale, and upon him sits the eternal skeleton death. In his wake, hellfire gulfs all. You really grabbed the emotion of the original, made it your own in many ways. Just again, a wonderfully composed piece, complex and very satisfying.
Thanks so much for that.
And Bobby, I'll give you final word.
Thank you. I'm always impressed with your writing. And both you and Laurent are like cerebral pieces, and this, of course, is no exception. It has some very, very deep metaphor, some very, very detailed philosophical view in here, and it just the four horsemen, very prominent, the stark, it's the somber of the somber appeal to it, and the starkness of it are just, it's a very sobering piece, but you cannot be impressed by the way that you express things. That the last stanza, gaze long and marvel not. Now vexes to waken a nightmare, rise again to hear the falconer's cry, horsemen pass by. A very chilling ending, because it really is almost anticlimactic.
Thanks so much, Bobby. And with that, I'm turning it back to you, Neutron, for our next one.
Okay, so I'm going to get Bobby to read Jack Blue's poem and Owl's Ballad number 1.
I can do that. I don't even need a reason. Okay. Owls and Owl's Ballad number 1. And in his author's note, it says inspired by the quote from Under Ben Bulben, by W.B.H., and it looks like he's listed the whole thing down there, by Jack Blue. Castle is no wizardry, nor a piece of human pride. If not a hillock in the shade of the green infinity where the dryad's memory resounds with the holy sea. On the tower, I remember how I flew off clumsily like a feeble coracle, with my little childish wings flapping on her crystal song as she sang it silently. All the waves pass away to be soaring for today, like stray horses galloping from below the newborn king to the sorrowful gray shore, just to find the bluish door. Fly off to another world where no fantasy has whirled, but a gray of sapphire or a joyous harbinger no real painter can discern on the universe of clay. The dauntless green infinity defies the moonless canvases after every muse confesses that vibrant luminosity survives no perennial night, awaking soul's cosmic flight. Let the leafy castle cover every shadow as they hover on the pictured paradise, staggering or thinking twice to leave the earthly tower in quest of limestone's flower. End poem.
Great read, Bobby. I thought this was hauntingly beautiful, full of pathos and lyricism and melancholy that drives the story forward quite compellingly. I especially like that penultimate stanza, the dauntless green infinity defies the moonless canvases. After every muse confesses their vibrant luminosity survives no perennial night, awaiting soul's cosmic flame. So beautiful. It's a gorgeous poem. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Wow, you did it again. We seem to pick up.
Did Laurent drop, perhaps?
Hold on one second. Let me check. He did. We're losing callers here. Let's see if he can. Let's not have dead air. In the meantime, Neutron, your thoughts?
Yeah, look, I was drawn to the same section as you were, and I think Laurent was about to touch on that too. But I just have to say it had some wonderful poetic lyricism that Jack Blue graced us with, and it was a superb homage to Under Ben Bulben by W.B. Yeats. And the jump to one's death from the tower to leave the earthly tower in quest of limestone's flower, just epic phrasing in my eyes.
Absolutely, great comment.
And sounds like the gremlins got it.
Yeah, so I do have Laurent back. I am bringing him on right now.
Okay,
you should be back, Laurent.
Are they not?
Yeah, it's just one of those nights. That's all right.
Yeah, the
maybe it's
the stanza you quoted. The stanza you quoted immediately struck me, among all the rest, which are excellent. I love that it defies the moonless canvases. After every muse confesses their vibrant luminosity. This poem was written by someone who loves poetry and loves classical poetry, because it really fits the tone of Yeats, for that matter, the tone of Shakespeare in many ways. I love the title, An Owl's Ballad, Number One. And it was such a great start. The castle is no wizardry, nor a piece of human pride, if not a hillock in the shade of the green infinity where the dryad's memory resounds with the holy sea. Just gorgeous piece. I wish I could be a little more interpretive of it, but off the cuff, that's the best I'll do.
No, I thought that was a great comment, and yeah, it is extraordinary poetry. Bobby, I'll give you a final word on this one.
Thank you. I was actually kind of studying what he had left underneath the prompt, the poem by Yeats. And he has very, very successfully mirrored or echoed the rhyming pattern, while not mimicking it, he suggested to test it in his format. He's got eight. I'm looking at it from a technical point of view, which I always seem to tend to do first. The format, the use of assonance is quite skilled, and you can see it. Pride, shade, remember, clumsily, wings, so it just the way and the use of language. On the tower, I remember how I flew off clumsily like a feeble coracle. I mean, if you don't know what a coracle is, you are definitely going to have to find out, because you lose something. But it requires some erudition to really immerse yourself in this. It's a very cerebral piece. It is very, and I agree with Laurent. This is a writer who is has a deep respect and abiding love for poetry, because of the way the language is so artfully used in this. I'm going to take this one and tuck it into my favorites.
Excellent comment. Okay, and with that, let's move on to our next one.
Okay, so our next one is my poem. I'm just jumping back to the forum. Of course, that's when I fall down. Hang on one moment. This one was written to a poem by Yeats called A Prayer for My Daughter, and it's written about my niece. And it's called The Life Raft Waits for None. Those Minnie Mouse ears that sat atop a golden mop of messy curls, playing follow the leader, holding onto coattails like a calf guided by the elephant herd, protected by the matriarch and tusks alike, a pioneer a third of the way up to my hips, you strayed from the herd and split your head on a concrete edge, dusted yourself off with an egg on your head, and jollied on heedless for that which life threw at you, blustering like the Tasmanian trade winds, twisting kismet to your mainsail. Life has not been a straight line. The waves have crept up past your knees and rims your feeble neck like a noose. But you will soon learn to float and doggy paddle till the storm front passes. The life raft waits for none. Climb aboard and shelter with the tipsy sailors feasting on brandy, quince, and crackers. The rain will pass as sure as the sun will shine through the long tresses that now reach your waist, beauty growing with each passing squall. End poem.
Wow. Such a wonderful piece there, Neutron. Thanks so much. Yeah, I love this. The pain of innocence lost, of girlhood ruined, is mapped so well in the poem. Just amazing. And Laurent, your thoughts? Are you on mute?
Of course, my first mute in a while. All right.
That's all right.
I love the metaphors that were used in this. Just to look at the last three stanzas, for instance, you will soon learn to float and doggy paddle till the storm front passes. The life raft awaits for none. Climb aboard and shelter with the tipsy sailors, feasting on brandy, quince, and crackers. The rain will pass, as sure as the sun will shine through the long tresses that now reach your waist, beauty growing with each passing squall. The metaphors you used to illustrate the slings and outrages of life for a child are so lovingly rendered, but with a great deal of dexterity and skill, the way you find a way, protected by the matriarch and tusks alike, really made me smile, because, you know, that's what it's all about. And the Minnie Mouse ears give it a charm and a descriptive quality that allows us to envision the child and then watch as she manages to bluster like the Tasmanian trade wind. Really a great write.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I, too, really love that open with the Minnie Mouse ears. It just brought us right there into childhood innocence. And, Bobby, your thoughts?
This is a deeply affectionate piece. This is filled with a lot of love, and it's a very human piece. The opening stanza, those Minnie Mouse ears that sat atop a golden mop of messy curls. It's such a beautiful beginning. It sets the tone for what a little moppet you're talking about. You go on to describe her stature and her resilience. And I love your cultural references too, blustering like the Tasmanian trade winds. You climb aboard and shelter with tipsy sailors feasting on brandy, quince, and crackers. It is charmingly you. It has some wonderful references in there. I mean, you have painted a beautiful word picture of a resilient young lady who is just she loves life and is fearless.
Thanks, Bobby.
Thank you.
And with that, we are going to move forward. So what a difference 2 weeks ago makes. 2 weeks ago, we were struggling to fill the 2 hours, and now we've got a board full of poetry. So we're going to limit comments to two. And I see we've got Ken Smith up, and who would you like to read it?
Look, I might actually give this one a read. Oh, no, I just read. What am I doing? Laurent, if you can read, that would be great.
Certainly. By Ken Smith, and it's called This Place Called Home. I've tried to learn my trade, to wot well what I have made. But if the town in which you live doesn't give back what you give, I enhance the town's magazine, pay for my poems to be seen, instead of the other way round. This town is backwards, upside down. A center turning point is needed to grow a poem well-seeded, like artful wheel-spun pottery. Fine clay makes fine poetry. Can't write an ode on a Grecian urn, on a Dollarama vase, unadorned, a writer's sharp pen needs fertile soil to dig in. End poem.
Excellent read, Laurent. And Neutron, if we can start with you.
Certainly. I think there was a lot of truth to this poem, just in my experience, especially when you're trying to get published. And I think there was an article that came out to say, at least in Australia, that you were looking at an average of $12,000 being provided in commission for the for a novel that was reasonably successful. So it makes it almost impossible to earn a crust as a writer alone. And it is undervalued in my eyes, and the arts of the poor for it. So very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Bobby, if you would like to comment on this brevity.
Certainly. I like Neutron's comment on that. I like the interpretation, the author's interpretation of the particular prompt he selected. It is almost a parody of the Yeats piece, but it is it's almost colloquial in its approach, and it's actually very contemporary. So I think this is a very, very skilled piece that has taken a period piece and has brought it up to date.
Absolutely. Great insight. And with that, let's move on to our next one.
All right, so we've got a poem by S. Sharp, and Bobby, if you can read this one, please.
I would be more than coiled of that. Okay. Oh, S. Sharp, yes. I always enjoy his pieces. Okay. Scattered gravestones. Patterns and rows in the field stand as a memory of past life. Everything organized, perfectly manicured, orderly. That was before the storms. Now, nothing is how it should be. Chaos blooms, eyes carved into granite, cheekbones, gravestones, self-sustaining cycles. Pinwheels attached to white picket fences spin out of control. You, me, them, everyone, spun, turned in the whisper that screams from 6 feet below. End poem.
Great read, Bobby. Yeah, I love this piece. I especially like the poem's arc. That was before the storms. Now nothing is how it should be. Chaos blooms from eyes carved into granite, cheekbones, gravestones, self-sustaining cycles. I thought this poem indeed casts a cold eye on life, on death. Very good riffing off the prompt. And Laurence, I'll give you final word on this piece.
Yeah, the lines from the prompts under Ben Bulbin. Though gravedigger's toil is long, sharp their spades, their muscles strong, they but thrust their buried men back in the human mind again. Speaks so strongly to the last stanza of the poem, you, me, them, everyone, spun, turned in the whisper that screams from 6 feet below. Just a wonderful interpretation. The chaos of life and death, the neat organization of how we lay our dead to rest, so diametrically opposed, so peaceful now. Wonderfully done.
Absolutely. Great comment. Okay, Neutron, on to our next one. Where would you like to go?
Okay, so I've got a poem by Mark Loopy, and there should be a sound cloud.
Indeed there is. I will hit it.
The two philosophers in the city of the dead. Philosopher one. The sun burns up the sky and hits the waves. The city's darkness now is thick with caves, holes in collapsing buildings, broken windows. Life but spider tapestry is indoors. Shrouding the beds filled up with skeletons. A new joy, human love, and feeling once. I'd like to think that love could still survive, even if nobody now is left alive. At least love, in some sort of general sense, still there as spiritual intelligence. Okay, I'm not too sure just what I mean. Still working on a theory in between. But there is nothing loving over there. Only a hovering bird who doesn't care. Philosopher too. I suspect that's a part of being human. Circumstances changed. Sometimes men and women become casualties or just wandered off whenever they might feel they had enough. In this particular case, there is no mystery. This city died, discarding all its history, when the machines took on the human function. We'll all still be in charge, was the presumption. But there was nothing anyone had to know, and there was no place anyone had to go. Nothing had that any value anymore, since all things were delivered to the door. An optimized and frictionless workflow, all done with audio and video. Eventually, the organic was abandoned. Obviously, not quite the way they planned it. The last of them died painlessly in bed. Not really worth processing the dead. It turns out love, in any general sense, is bound up in organic sentience. Machines, like us two wise ones, simulate love better than the humans, and that's great, but meaningless. For androids, it is empty. For us machines, efficiency is plenty. It's fine. There's nothing loving over there. Only a long-winged bird who doesn't care.
Thank you for the SoundCloud, Mark. Great piece. And Neutron, I'll give you first word on it.
Yeah, I thought it was a really interesting take on the Yeats prompt that was chosen. It certainly had a dystopian vibe to it that I believe Mark was aiming for. The thing is, when artificial intelligence starts to replace humans, where do you draw the line? And, well, one might question whether the Earth would flourish under the artificial intelligence overlords. But I believe Mark has certainly produced a thought-provoking piece with a twist at the end. Very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Bobby, your thoughts.
This is a very complex piece. I mean, the rhyming pattern, the couplets are so smoothly crafted. The SoundCloud was terrific, and the verse read by the author it was incomparable. The emotion, the nuance in it was wonderful. This is very fine storytelling. I like the way he's juxtaposed two philosophers looking at the same site against each other, and the unmistakable indictment at the end of almost like Mary Shelley, Frankenstein, or the modern Prometheus, the advent in their case industrialization, in our case just automation and artificial intelligence, it has a ring of foreboding at the end.
Great insight. Okay, I am turning it back to you, Neutron.
Okay, so Richard, I'm going to get you to read Towards the Death's Odorland by I'm Samara.
Yep. Okay, so this is based upon Sailing to Byzantium, and it's called Towards Death's Odorland by I'm Samara. And the earth curses at night as everything rots and dies. Then even seems that dumb drum struck twice through mortal silence on contorted quietness stops young. Of all old corpses first. In the dying days, the earth creaks quietly with bells and wakes. Like the well-lit Zion weeping echo. Each one in turn perishes and yells, and the providence sprouting its laughter, loud and wild, the roar of the blood, the maddening dark, shone steady sun as bright to both old and young, drip, drip in death's odor land. End of poem. Laurent, if we can start with you, what'd you think?
This is a great piece, especially those last lines, and the providence sprouting its laughter, loud and wild, the roar of the blood, the maddened dark shone steady sun as bright to both old and young, drip, drip in Death's Odorland. This looks at death in a way that seems to exclude all but that excludes the young. It seems to be filled with the future, the fate of the old, regardless of what waits for all of us alike. It looks at the young in a way that excludes the old. I'm not saying exactly what I wanted to say on this, but hopefully you get the meaning.
No, I thought it was actually quite insightful. Good job. I too love this piece. I thought that much was accomplished in this haunting property. I thought it was mystical, surreal, and yet all too real. Death's odor fills the reader's nostrils, and we recoil as if awakened from a trance. I thought it was a great piece. And with that, Neutron, I am turning it back to you for our next one.
Okay, so we have a SoundCloud by Selena. Are you there, Richard?
Yeah, I was on mute.
The sands of time may shift and shape, and the passing of years may take its toll. Though our bodies and even minds it may drape, it can never invade and erode the soul. Though age may cast its spell on your face, etching here and there lines of the left, 'tis your blithe spirit and beauty of grace, which for me shall ever remain steadfast. While your eyes may dim, a little there shine, and over the years fade in their vibrant hue, the love flowing from them will endlessly be mine, and my being will dance within the essence of you. When we can no longer run in meadows of youth, we'll sit and watch the sunset in glorious eaves of gold, for woven within our lives together breathes an eternal truth, that for us and our love there never will be old.
What a beautiful piece. Okay, so if we could start comments off with you, Neutron, what'd you think?
I thought it was a lovely piece of poetry, a very touching tribute to enduring love. And just a quick comment, because we are running short on time, old is relative, and I think that you are only as old as you feel, and for some it harkens early, and for the others they live active lives for what seems an eternity. Well, one thing is for sure, surrounded by all forms of love, it certainly can give one a pep in their step. Great poem.
Absolutely. Okay, let's take one more comment. Bobby, what'd you think?
This is a love letter. It's a beautiful piece. I like her dedication at the top. A friend in celebration of the love, and he and his wife share. And it is so beautifully done, so expressive, so deeply emotional and very intimate in the way that it expresses the observed love. So very, very nicely done piece.
Great comment. Okay, so I see we have our next one. Where would you like to go? Who would you like to read it?
If Laurent can give this a read, that would be great.
All right. This is called The Puzzle Between Eternities by Kang. It was a long time past that previous, and so, too, the future due. But while here, between those eternities, I look long at the corridors and halls and doors, without hint or word construed, and with no avail from pressing time, for now search this puzzle with haste, the grains of time fall fewer, and at this stage is a call for pace. This jigsaw continues as a maze, convoluted, full of dead ends, but surely their pieces missing. Does this unsolvable quest pretend? For where are the pieces within this maze that form the lonely mouse? With wee legs, energetic legs, and never resting legs in his quest to find a way out. End thought.
Great read, LeVant. Yeah, I thought this was a haunting metaphor on the human condition. Somber and existential, it's a very strong offering. And Laurence, if we could get a quick comment from you on the piece.
Yeah, the maze we find all ourselves in, and we are ever scampering, looking for a way out. The Puzzle Between Eternities is a great look at that and the way we live.
Excellent comment. Okay, Neutron, I think we have time for one more.
Yeah, so I'm hoping that Captain can give this a read, the poem by Rooster Cogburn.
I'd be delighted. Let me tee it up here. They shoot horses, don't they? By Rooster C. One score plus 10 years equals 30. His membership loyal, near unbroken. Maybe a surprise, communal celebration, perhaps even pearl or diamond token. Teammates past, present, show appreciation. Not so expectancy, proved presumptuous. Oh well, midst of busy playing season, competitive minds oblivious to sentiment. Saturday's must-win game, the reason and oversight. No worries, his morale unbent. Yet brief ponder, mute, mobile communication, and chuckled inwards, reflecting accordingly, landline nowadays, archaic, near obsolete. Skipper were aware even of ever enthusiastic availability. Much later, a text, old hand, take a back seat. And that was that, said to report, he'd run final race, just like an old derby horse, out to graze grass, neither buy nor leave, dropped. What's more, forgot. Doyen domiciled, ageism, a trait, rather crass. Reconcile, at least, not a leg break. Perish the thought. End poem.
Great read there, Bobby. Neutron, I'm going to give you first word on this one.
Sure. Look, I will keep it short. There is nothing worse than the apathetic nature of being put out to pasture. And it always amazes me, at least in Australia, how we can expect people to work well into their 70s with the level of ageism about. So keep writing and well done.
Absolutely. Yeah, I too thought this was a great comment on the cruelty of old age and society's ageism is laid bare quite skillfully throughout the poem. Pathos and melancholia are like a gut punch. I thought it was very nicely done. And I'm not sure if you have a short one, maybe we can get it in there.
We do. I just put it on the board. So, Richard, can you give this one a read by Sandy G?
Sure. Yep, it's by Sandy G. It's called Crickets and Katydids. Gone are crickets and katydids, turtles, skunks, and turkey, familiars in a simple country living, fox and coyote now roam the ground where hero statues proudly stood. A setting sun, light western skies in crimson, the world bids a last goodbye to the parting glow of freedom. Inequity can be cast to blame, but equity cannot escape the credit. End of poem. Okay, Laurent, if we can start comments with you.
Certainly, although I missed most of this poem. Give me just one second, please. I'm sorry. I know we're short on time. The crickets okay. and the katydids being gone, the turtle, skunk, and turkey, all the things that we expect to see in country living seem to have occupied the last bastions of our civilization, I think. Lovely piece.
I actually agree with you. I think it was a strong offering on our time, which echo 1919, and this is a poem inspired by Yeats's 1919, and echo it quite eerily. I thought the hollow nationalism, the exploitation of spheres in order to subvert civil liberties and freedom. I think he accomplished a lot in this brevity. Quite well done. So we are pretty much out of time. And I'm going to take our final minute to, first of all, encourage everyone to join Pam Ray in half an hour. And she always has an amazing show. And to join Fill My Eyes with Poetry tomorrow night at 10 p.m. Eastern for the open poetry night. And then I want to thank everyone that called in, Tom, Bobby, Laurent, and of course, special thanks to my co-host, Neutron. I want to also thank Fill My Eyes for making the show happen in the background, as she always does. And final thanks goes, of course, to those who write for these shows every 2 weeks. Without you guys, there is no show. So I think that's it. Neutron, did you want to say any final words?
Yeah, look, I'd just like to say thank you, Richard, for hosting all of us and for keeping the contest going with the prompts, which you do for the most part. And I thought this was a spectacular show. We will get around to the carryovers next episode. And apologies, we just had a huge response to this contest. Which is a testament to the prompt.
It is. Yeah, Yeats really brought out the best, and it's going to be a tough one to judge. So we'll do our best, but we do appreciate everyone and the cyber medallions are just a token. The real appreciation is reading your poetry on the air. Okay, well, with that, I am going to bid everyone a good night, and thank you all again for joining us, and join us in 2 weeks. I'm not sure exactly what we'll do, but it will definitely be something inspired by the arts.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, guys. Have a good night.
Bye.